Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to get all the info you need on the Vanderbilt Commodores. This is the Anchor Down Podcast with Vanderbilt reporter Max Hurd.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Max.
On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
And the Game Nashville app.
It's time to Anchor Down. And listen up to the Anchor Down Podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Monday evening, March 15th. 2021, and it is SEC Baseball Week. The Commodores will welcome in South Carolina in a top 20 matchup over the weekend to start SEC play. Before that, we have got a series against Oklahoma State to recap, in which Vandy took 2 out of 3, sweeping Saturday's doubleheader and then losing the Sunday finale in a top 10 true road non-conference series, by far their best opponent in the non-conference season. Vandy will play Belmont in a midweek tomorrow, then South Carolina comes here this weekend, and I am here to debrief the Oklahoma State series. We cover Vanderbilt baseball year-round here on the Anchor Down Podcast, as it should be done. Subscribe to the podcast by searching Anchor Down Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. It is free, and you can listen anytime, anywhere on those apps. Friday night rained out at Oklahoma State, so for the third time in 4 series, Vandy does not play a game Friday, a game Saturday, a game Sunday, and it's just old hat for Kamar Rocker at this point. I mean, he went Monday, Sunday, Saturday, Friday, just kidding, rained out, Saturday again. So the man still hasn't pitched on a Friday all year, and he comes out and turns in an 8-shutout-inning performance a week after Tim Corbin said, "It's going to be a couple of weeks." Coach Corbin said 3 weeks before Rocker is allowed to come back out for a 7th or an 8th inning with a pitch count over 90. And here he is, 103 pitches deep, 8 scoreless, a lot of short innings. He only faced 27 batters. That is only 3 above the minimum for an 8-inning outing. 9 strikeouts, just 2 hits and a walk, the only 3 base runners against him. And again, no runs allowed by Rocker. Exceptional performance. Tim Corbin said he finally came out on the mound and he settled his adrenaline in the early going, and we saw it in all 3 of the home starts. Rocker was not good in the first inning, especially starts 2 and 3. From there, he settled in, and this game, he was able to control it a lot better. He was great from the jump, and that enabled him to go 8 full. We saw Rocker use all 4 of his pitches. We saw changeup for swing and a miss to lefties, which was a lot of fun. He had a lot of arm side 2-seam run on his fastball. I'm not sure if those were 2-seam fastballs or if that's just natural run on his 4-seam. Looking forward to asking about that this week before Rocker pitches again on Friday, presumably in the conference opener against the South Carolina Gamecocks. I thought Rocker was great. I thought he was really at his best. He was working really quickly. He was large and in charge. He was controlling the game both physically and emotionally. The fielders were involved, which Tim Corbin always enjoys. I'm a fan of the strikeout, but always fun to share the baseball, as I've heard Coach Corbin say, I think 3 times now since that outing, and that's something that he stresses. He wants Rocker to pitch to put the ball in play. But the changeup was a swing and miss pitch. Obviously, the slider was a swing and miss pitch. The slider played up and into righties for a swing and a miss, which I thought was really cool to see. And that was new. I mean, we've seen it at times, but the slider is a swing and a miss pitch from the waist down. And usually, just from the hitter's knees down for Kamar Rocker. So to see it play up in the zone like that, where it basically becomes a whole nother pitch, was really, really cool. I thought Rocker was great. By far his best start of the year. Obviously, doesn't take a genius to know that. But I thought he was incredible. I thought he was at his absolute best. And you see the upside. And the progression he has made week to week makes you think, well, what's next? Makes you think Carson Fulmer territory, where you expect Vandy to not even have to use a reliever on a Friday night most weekends. That's greedy to expect that, and not really reasonable, but 8 scoreless on the 2nd weekend of March in a non-conference game gets you thinking about that. Nick Maldonado pitched the ninth, a perfect inning with two strikeouts. He continues to be one of Vanderbilt's best pitchers. Maldonado does. Really impressed with him over the course of this young season so far as a sophomore. Vandy beat Oklahoma State 5-0 on Friday. On the hitting side, while Vandy's ace was dominant, I thought the Commodore Bats had an amazing plan that they executed to perfection. The plan is not the perfect part. The plan is the obvious plan against Parker Scott. Lay off the off-speed pitches from the lefty, get deeper in counts, and don't chase with two strikes. So the plan is obvious, but the execution is the tough part, and I thought Vandy executed really well. Scott only got 12 outs in the game, exited down 2-0 in a game that Vandy won 5-0. Vandy worked base runners, they worked walks. Scott walked four guys on a day where 22 Vandy batters walked in the doubleheader that the Commodores swept. Of course, the second game was a wash. The first game was close, and I think the numbers are legit for game one and number two. You read them at your own risk, but I thought the hitting plan was very solid for Vandy. Parker Noland was in the middle of a lot of it for the Commodores. Couple of RBIs, scored a run, and it wasn't the long ball in this game. It was in the last two games, but no homers for Vandy in this one. Noland, a bases-loaded walk, got the first run in the third, and then Tate Colwick, a big RBI double to bring in Isaiah Thomas and make it 2-0 in the top of the fourth inning. He did not miss a home run by much. Then in the top of the fifth, a very important sacrifice bunt by Jack Bolger. The fact that they had a true sacrifice on with the third-place hitter with runners at first and second and nobody out shows you exactly what the Vandy coaching staff knows they need with Kamar Rocker going against the opposing ace. They're thinking, if we get to 3 or 4, that's it. Because that's not a situation where Tim Corbin is going to bunt his three guy as much as maybe he would 10 years ago. Bolger bunted. He plays team offense, as Tim Corbin says about Jack Bolger. I'm dropping the Corbin cliches today. Sorry, guys. But it is true for Jack Bolger. Gave himself up in the middle of that inning. Vandy made it 4-0, and then Bolger a productive out in the eighth inning. Made it 5-0. Bolger was in the three-hole DHing, and he did that, both of those things, in all three games of the series. Dominic Keegan still out after a positive COVID-19 test last week. So he's missed four games. He will presumably miss all four again this week. Don't know that for sure. But if the timeline lines up, I don't think he could be back for any of South Carolina. But that remains to be seen. The fact that they have publicized that he tested positive for COVID is more information than we received from really any of the other sports this entire academic year for Vandy. So grateful to even have that information, so we won't press on exactly when he will be back, because I don't think the team really knows either, because he has to test out of the testing protocol, and Luke Murphy was contact traced from Keegan. I presume they're roommates, don't know that for sure, but Murphy was contact traced. There's a chance Tim Corbin said this Monday night on the Commodore Hour on ESPN 94.9 that Murphy could be back sometime this week, since he could clear quarantine because he did not test positive again. Luke Murphy was just contact traced. But I like Bolger going into the three-hole. I like him DHing a lot because he was having trouble judging balls out in left field, and I think it may have taken away a little bit from his offensive focus, which is only natural for a freshman in his first couple weeks of college games, but he is a perfect fit at DH right now. Is Parker Noland a perfect fit at first? Probably not. Is he back to DHing or playing third as soon as Keegan returns? 100% yes. So you're going to have somebody playing a little bit out of position, but I think DHing for Bolger is the perfect thing right now. And he's shown that he can hit the ball hard, that he can drive the ball. Batted balls have been great. The outcomes haven't always been positive for Vanderbilt of his batted balls, but I think Bolger is a very good fit in that three spot with Keegan out. Young is staying two. Noland at four is a nice fit. I think he could hit third too. I wouldn't have any problem with that. And Isaiah Thomas all of a sudden comes out and hits three homers in the last two games. Seems like he's back a little bit. Not all the way there, I don't think, out of his little slump. But I think Thomas fifth is a good spot for him. Catcher sixth. Colwick, who's starting to heat up, seventh. And then Bradfield eighth is nice. Gonzalez ninth for now. I think Gonzalez may lose some playing time once Keegan comes back, the way that Noland has hit. I think they might want him in at third in order to give some flexibility at DH with either Bolger or Spencer Jones doing that. So that's game one of the Saturday doubleheader. Vandy won at 5-0, and then Saturday turned into a Commodore romp behind Jack Leiter. Saturday game two, I should say. 18-4, the Commodores put it on Oklahoma State. Justin Wroblewski just didn't have it. 7 walks in 3-plus innings of work. Vandy patient again against him, and I think there was just a lot of carryover from game one into game two, and Vandy brought the power bats. Carter Young was robbed of a homer, and then Tate Colwick hit a grand slam. That made it 4-0 in the top of the fourth inning. Colwick hit that grand slam, by the way, to the same spot in left field, a little bit towards center, but I would call that the deeper part of left, maybe the left field gap. Same spot, he hit the RBI double and just missed a homer in game number one of the doubleheader. Takes a grand slam out to pretty much that exact same spot. He is heating up. So Colwick, a grand slam, made it 4-0. That is all that Vandy would need, and they turned it on from there. Bulger, an RBI single in the sixth. Thomas, a 3-run homer, his first of 3 on the weekend. And a couple of singles made it a real blowout. 12-0, top 7. And then the second team gets in there. 6 runs in the top of the eighth inning. First college hit for the junior Matt Hogan, a nice moment. And then my boy, the young Yinzer, Pittsburgh's finest, Troy Leneve, opposite field homer for his second college hit and a really impressive oppo tank over the Oklahoma State bullpen for a 3-run shot. So shout out Troy Leneve. I'm really sad I didn't get to call that home run, and I hope that he has another in him because we are going to get Yinzy whenever that happens. Shout out to the Leneve family. Great family, Pine Richland High School, Pittsburgh, PA. Great place, great people, great accent. I kind of slip into it sometimes when I'm not thinking about it. I might have just did it right there, a bat. Great moment for Vandy, 18-4. And how about Donye Evans coming in to pitch the ninth? He allowed 2 runs. Didn't matter, it was a blowout. But college debut, so the only guys who I've got who are healthy and available and have not played yet in a game are Ryan Stefuk, who is a freshman left-handed pitcher, and then Brett Hansen, who is technically a freshman left-handed pitcher. He is old enough to be a junior, and he was on a Mormon mission the last 2 years, so he's got a little bit of a longer learning curve after 2 years pretty much away from baseball and completely away from pitching and high-level baseball. So we'll see if we see either of those guys down the road. I imagine Stefuk we will see, unless he's injured, which I don't know about, but I don't believe he is. And Hansen, I have not been able to see him pitch a bullpen or anything like that just because of COVID, but you get a sense the way his development goes. Maybe he does get into a game at some point, and he's a guy who was supposed to be a day one draft prospect type guy at some point, and you know that he can work his way back there, and that's why he came to Vanderbilt. I mean, he could have been drafted and taken his mission and then gone to pro ball, like we've seen some guys do with military service, Noah Song. I'm trying to think if anybody's done it with a religious mission, but there have been situations like that where players have obligations away from baseball and they can still be drafted, sign, get their bonus, and then their contract doesn't start until they report 2 or however many years later. So that was an option, but I think Hansen saw the long term and knew that he would be in a good calendar type timeline plan at Vandy after 2 years away from the game. And his younger brother, Ben, is also committed to Vanderbilt, just graduated high school last year, and is doing the same thing. So he will have a template to follow. So those are the two guys who have not played yet for Vandy. The 2 injuries, and one of them is new. We just found out about last week since the last podcast. Michael Doolin had Tommy John surgery last week. I don't have a ton of details right now, unfortunately. Doolin was coming back from a nerve procedure on his pitching elbow that happened in the winter, and he was expected back sometime in the first few weeks, so I'm not sure if he had a setback, if the injury was more severe. It may have been one of those 2 things. It may have been something else, but saw him in a sling during batting practice on Tuesday, and that's never a good sign, and we asked Coach Corbin the next day, and he had Tommy John, so he may have even had it the morning of that Tuesday game against Memphis, March the 9th, so stinks for Michael Doolin, did not get to pitch this season. Sophomore was very good last year, and hopefully he'll be back at some point next season. And it's tough to have it in the spring because, of course, he'll miss the fall, and then by the time he's getting back to full strength, everybody's already pitching in their first round of games, and maybe you get him back right at this time next year, but that may even be wishful thinking. So we'll see what it looks like for Doolin. You just hope that he can get back and be valuable for Vanderbilt at some point because next year he's a junior and he's draft eligible. But again, the draft is different now. Eligibility is different now. Doolin, since he did not pitch in a game this year, I think will technically be a third-year freshman next year. So he'll have a ton of leverage in the draft. So I don't know if that's something I'm just worrying about for no reason. But I think that'll be okay. And then Ryan Keenan also hasn't pitched. He's technically not even on the roster. He has taken a medical redshirt, so he's not even in uniform for games. He is also working his way back from Tommy John, sophomore lefty pitcher, who also did not pitch in a game last season as a freshman. Seems weird that we could just kind of gloss over a Jack Leiter start, but in a 14-run victory, I don't think he was the A-plot of this game, although he was very good. A little bit of control again, just 59% of his pitches were strikes. 57 strikes, 39 balls out of 96 total, walked three again, walked more guys than hits allowed, which has happened a couple of times this season, struck out seven, but I think saw the progression that we needed to see from him. And I think Leiter, we talked about how Rocker could be becoming automatic, or you get tempted to say he might be becoming automatic. I think Leiter already might be automatic, and I think he might be a little more automatic than Rocker, and I'm sure we'll find out that I'm wrong at some point, and it's not like either of them is going to have a winning start every time. But I think Leiter is a little bit more of a sure thing right now, and I've talked about that in the context of the MLB draft before, but I think Leiter is, at least heading into this weekend, the more sure thing, and I think they both come out of it making strides forward. Rocker's stride forward was a larger stride forward just because of how deep he went in the game compared to his past starts, but both of them left with shutout leads, and both of them won. And again, for the third time in 4 weeks, they split a doubleheader. Insane. How many times is this going to happen? Wow. I mean, these are special days. Those really are special days. For that to happen once creates a special day. For it to happen three times and for Vandy to be 6-0 in those doubleheaders is extra, extra special. And those are, I love the early season. I always have. And that's why I love doing those early season games on radio the last 2 years. That's why I love the SEC Plus games. We get the games that don't get picked up at home by national television. So we'll get all the midweek games. We'll get most of the non-conference games, with the exception of when there are other sport conflicts. And I love the early season. It's so fun. But those are the types of moments in the early season that you look back on. It's just like, holy crap. Like, did that really happen in February? Were there really three times in a month span that Jack Leiter and Kamar Rocker started on the same day and Vandy swept three doubleheaders? I mean, whatever happens in June happens, you're going to look back on that and be like, what a freaking moment that was. Living was easy when those games were on the calendar. Wow. Yeah, fun stuff. I love those early games, and we're getting to the crunch time now, and this was obviously a huge series at Oklahoma State, but the non-conference season is fun. The midweek games have been almost, I would put the non-conference season ahead of the midweek games in terms of which I enjoy more, just because some of those midweeks can fall into midweek madness, and depending who's where with which team at the course of the season, some of those games are a little funky and not in a good way. But yeah, I think every time this team plays, there's always a chance something special happens. There's always a chance something memorable happens. And we've seen our good share of that here in the first portion of this 2021 year. So into the Sunday finale, Oklahoma State bounces back and scores off of Thomas Schultz. Schultz gave up six runs, only got five outs, and he gave up two homers and a hard double, all three of which came off of fastballs. Here's what Tim Corbin had to say on the Commodore Hour with Kevin Ingram on ESPN 94.9 earlier on this Monday, March the 15th, about Thomas Schultz's outing and what he did not have in his third start that he did have in his first two, and especially the last time out when he pitched very well against UIC in the first game of that series.
Location, ball in the middle of the plate. If, right. You know, you mentioned good teams, and that's a physical team. If you take Oklahoma State, you just look at the DNA of their players and what they're made up of. That's physicality with age. You get physicality with age, you get a very dangerous team, and that's taking out a guy like Nolan McLean. And Nolan McLean's a freshman. He's a quarterback on the football team, and the freshman that doesn't look like a freshman. You know, he sits in the batter's box and he's got a very good presence about him. But McLean, and whether it's Hewitt or whether it's Cabanis or whether it's Brock Mathis or whether it was Jake Thompson or Encarnacion, Strand, any of those guys, they could bounce you at any point in time. It's just a physical team, and that's what they did. And the ball gets in the middle of the plate, whether it's a fastball or breaking ball, then they're going to do some damage. And, you know, Thomas just had one of those days where his ball was flat. He didn't have any angle to it. The breaking balls that he did throw that were down were way down, so they could make early decisions to stay off them. And the breaking balls that were in the middle of the zone were up. And they were in a position where you get a breaking ball closer to the hitter's eyes, then they can do damage. And that's what they did.
Thought that was a fair assessment from Tim Corbin of Thomas Schultz's outing on Sunday. The three hard hits and the three run scoring hits, which brought in six runs all in the bottom of the second inning, were all fastballs. And there just wasn't much movement on the pitch. And they weren't really in terrible locations, I didn't think, but they did catch plate. And they weren't really dancing much, as Tim Corbin said. So McLean had the two-run double on a fastball up and in, and then Alex Garcia, the two-run homer, fastball outside, about thigh-high on the outside part of the plate, and then Brock Mathis, a fastball that was middle in, just below the belt. Those are pitches that are going to get hit a long way, and I think Schultz has kind of been every other in terms of good outing. He was good in relief week one, didn't get to start because of the weather changes. Week two, I talked about it on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, I did not think he was anywhere at his best. He was not locating well, especially with his secondary pitches. The slider wasn't there for him. The changeup wasn't there for him. And they were there for him in the start against UIC when he started on Friday. He completed five in that game. I thought he was very good there. But then having a new trouble in terms of not getting what he wants on his fastball. And it's hard not to wonder if Schultz can't get consistent. Who could be next? I don't think it's Little yet because we haven't seen him go beyond four innings, but McIlvain has pitched well in extended outings. Lebokie, with the exception of his last appearance on Saturday when he gave up a couple of runs on three hits, again with a big lead, that was in relief of Leiter Saturday night in Oklahoma. But I think Lebokie would probably be next in line to start there. This is where you would also love to have Michael Doolin in the picture. And then also Patrick Riley is trained as a starter. I think Patrick Riley could start for Vandy sometime soon if needed. He has been very, very good and was good again when called upon this weekend in relief of Schultz after a little bit of trouble in his first inning, gave up another homer. It was McLean who had that double against Schultz next time around, homered off of Riley and took him deep twice. So that's a freshman mistake right there. But I think Riley's been pretty strong, so. And then maybe Ethan Smith goes into the rotation? That's a deeper conversation that we can have later on. But they still like him in the back of the bullpen. I don't think Schultz is going anywhere right now. I think he's still the best option. And he just kind of needs more run because as Rocker and Leiter have gotten all the play for all the different days they've pitched on, Schultz, I think, has been the underappreciated man with all the moving that's going on. And I think he's the type of player that can handle it well. But it's tough, and he's had to go in both directions, whereas Rocker and Leiter, with the exception of the weather cancellation this week for Rocker, they've both only had to go on short rest. They haven't had to cut their week down, then elongate their week, then cut their week down. So it's been interesting for Schultz. Been a tough calendar for everybody, and I think everybody just wants things to settle down, but every team in the country has been dealing with it. And it's had different results, and I think Vandy has come out of it probably in the best case possible. 12-2, just lost a win streak that was nine games with that 10-6 loss to the Pokes on Sunday. But I think they're in good shape right now. On the hitting side in that loss, I thought Vandy really had a chance to come back in this game. They were down 8-0. Tate Colwick hit a homer to make it 8-1, getting ahead of myself here. Colwick hit a homer to make it 8-1, so Colwick just keeps on hitting. Swung and missed at a slider down and away on the first pitch he saw, and then took a fastball next pitch. He was looking fastball the first time, too. He got it 0-1, did not miss. So Colwick with his second homer of the weekend. He had two on the weekend. Isaiah Thomas had three, so a couple of guys with multiple home runs in the series. Thomas provided two homers, top of the seventh inning. I thought they left Bryce Osmond, the starter, in too long. So Thomas homered off of Osmond. Then they let him come back around to the top of the order after he walked Jason Gonzalez. Cooper Davis with an RBI single to chase him. So at that point, it is 7-3. And I just think they left him in too long. I don't know what you're trying to prove there with Bryce Osmond, 110 pitches. You got some guys in the bullpen. I thought Trevor Martin and Brett Stanley, who came in after, were both very good and could have gone more than they did. So that's a move I make sooner from the Oklahoma State perspective. Carter Young against Trevor Martin had probably one of the best swings I've seen from a Vandy player in the last two seasons. Hitting left-handed, he went down and away. I mean, adjusted his entire body to go get this thing and lined a triple on like five hops to the wall on the left side of center field. That was crazy. I mean, Carter Young is on another planet right now. He's been Vandy's most valuable player on offense and defense amongst the position players. He's been so, so good. But that's a two-run triple. So that was in to finish off the top of the seventh inning after they went to the bullpen. So at that point, Vandy is down 8-5. And sorry, 9-5. So down four. And then Thomas homers again in the eighth inning with his old swing. I mean, that is true Isaiah Thomas on that last homer of the week. Cut it to 9-6, and man, was Ethan Smith rolling along, coming in to try and preserve that close deficit, which both times he's faltered this season have been pitching from behind. Georgia State gave up the homer. This time gave up an RBI single to Jake Thompson, but I don't think those two are related. This time the ump got drilled on a foul ball, and the inning completely stopped. Smith lost his rhythm. Again, he probably could have handled it, but I think the pace of that inning completely changed, and Smith lost the advantage he had with two outs, nobody on, and they end up getting that run, and that made it 10-6, and it felt kind of out of reach from there as Vandy went 1-2-3 in the top of the ninth. So that's my recap of the Oklahoma State weekend. Looking forward to being back home for four this week. Andrew Harris and I will have the call Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday, 6:30 Tuesday, 6:30 Friday, 1 o'clock Sunday, all Central Time against South Carolina on SEC Network Plus. Saturday's middle game against the Cox will be on national TV on SEC Network. I am told that Tom Hart and Kyle Peterson will be announcing that game. So three on SEC Plus, one on the main SEC Network this week, and looking forward to all of those and the SEC opening series across the league this week. And we plan to be back later in the week on Thursday with a player interview. Do not know who that will be yet, but after taking last week off because I was away, got to see some spring training. Saw Austin Martin play for the Blue Jays against the Pirates. Well-timed. Played in center field. 0 for 2 in the two at-bats I saw. But great to see Martin in spring training action wearing number 80 for the Jays. And we leave you with the Tim Corbin quote of the week. I asked Tim Corbin about Christian Little after his midweek start last Tuesday against Memphis. He had pitched in the bullpen since the last time he started and did not pitch well in that relief outing. Seemed like he bounced back well as a starter. That's what I asked Tim Corbin about. And then in the follow-up question is where the true quote of the week lies. A hidden comedic gem, one-liner, in an otherwise pretty serious pitching answer. Here we go.
What did you think of Christian's outing, especially compared to that first start where he didn't have the secondaries, and it seemed like he did tonight?
He did, and he needed to against this team because they can hurt you really quick. They've got a lot of strong kids and that can leave the yard in a short time. So, yeah, I thought it was solid. You could tell he ran out of gas in his third. But, you know, he got out of a tough jam in that first inning, which was really important for us. That was a tough part of their lineup, and we got the double play ball, which was good, and got a little bit of momentum that way. But he's still growing. I mean, he's a young kid that first, second, third time out there, and learning a lot. You know, and I think a lot of it is mental stamina, just as much as it is physical stamina. What he's got to learn inside the college game.
How do you think he reacted to the relief outing where he gave up a couple homers?
I think okay. I mean, you know, those balls ended up at Bricktops, so I mean, I think he rebounded okay. That'll come back at some point. We'll talk about that, but he moved on quickly from that.
Those home run balls ended up at Bricktops. Uh-oh. One more time, the quote of the week hidden in there.
You know, those balls ended up at Bricktops.
For those of you who do not live in Nashville or did not go to Vandy or haven't been here recently, Bricktops is a nice restaurant. It's on West End Avenue. It's probably about three quarters of a mile to a full mile pace away from home plate at Hawkins Field. Oh, that's awesome. Tim Corbin ripping the 17-year-old. I always reference, I may have referenced it on the podcast before, there was a viral tweet. Every now and then a tweet about Vandy baseball will go viral in the amateur baseball Twitter world. And it's often in the off season where there isn't like a highlight play to show. It'll be like, this is what Vanderbilt baseball does that makes them so great. And sometimes it's stuff like, look at these great jerseys from Vandy. And it's like, okay, like we've seen the jerseys. That's cool. Like, great for recruits to see, but it's the jerseys. And this one was so great because it was a write-up that Tim Corbin had submitted for a coaching publication. I'm not sure which one it was, or maybe it was an article he wrote in a baseball magazine, but it was the four or five things that Tim Corbin looks for in recruits, but it wasn't baseball traits. It was like personality traits, and it was organization, like academic focus, honoring commitment, like things like that. And the last one is a good sense of humor. And it includes, as Coach Corbin wrote, basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the part that stuck with me from it is, you got to have the ability to dish it out and take it. You got to be able to take smack and talk smack and be able to laugh about it and no hard feelings. And in the 8 years I've been around the team, I think everybody they have has fit that category. And it's something that Tim Corbin actively looks for, because I guess in his eyes it signals kind of emotional maturity a little bit, especially with an early enrollee like Little. But I mean, he wants to be able to rib his guys, and Coach Corbin at times is one of the boys, and especially in the practice environment and the infield environment, he chirps. I mean, he chirps guys. He chirps his players. I've heard some funny stuff. I've heard some really funny stuff that the coaches and players have said back and forth on the field. Everybody's laughing a lot of these times. It's great. But again, Tim Corbin on Christian Little. Where did those home runs land?
You know, those balls ended up at Bricktop.
If all goes well, for those of you listening before Tuesday night's game against Belmont, which as I record this is starting in about 21 hours, we are going to attempt to do a visual demonstration, assuming Christian Little starts that game, which I don't know for sure yet. We are attempting to do a good-natured demonstration of how far away Bricktops really is from Hawkins Field and what it would look like if a home run landed there. So hopefully we can get the video that we're planning in line, because I think it could be pretty funny, but we'll see what it ends up looking like. I filmed it today, and if we get some help from the production crew, I think it could be pretty hilarious. So hopefully we can get that in the broadcast, but hope you'll join us on SEC Network Plus throughout the week. Hope you subscribe to the Anchor Down podcast. If you don't and you care enough about Vanderbilt baseball to listen to 32 and a half minutes of this, what are you doing? Subscribe to the podcast. We do this every week, recap every series, player interviews on Thursdays as many weeks as we can. Hopefully we can do that every week throughout the season. Again, depends what the schedule holds the rest of the way, and there are a lot of wild cards in that this season, especially with COVID, but we hope to have somebody as many weeks as we possibly can for a lengthy interview. If you did not hear it, our first player interview of the year was Luke Murphy a couple of episodes back. So if you want to hear that interview with Luke, we talked about a lot of things. Really learned a lot from Luke Murphy, junior Vandy right-handed reliever. So go back and listen to that one, and we will be back on Thursday, hopefully with an interview. If not, we'll have something for you. That's for sure. You've been anchoring down and listening up with me, Max Herz. This is the Anchor Down podcast here on ESPN. 102.5 The Game.
You know, those balls ended up at Bricktop.